Just a little. Hi everybody, I'm Pete, I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and at a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And first things first, wanted to thank Dan and Vic for this very kind invitation to me to be here with you tonight, and for all the hard work they've done in putting this together with the other people. So if we can just take a moment to thank them for this convention tonight. I'm very grateful to be here tonight. I'm honored to be here and to share the podium with Simon and a couple of other speakers and my sponsor, Mark H. This is truly a treat for me to be here. And I suit up and show up today for fun and for free, and I'm glad to be here. What I found out by doing things like this is that, you know, God speaks through a group conscience. And when an invitation is extended to me, I suit up and show up. Because very simply, God has extended an invitation from your spirit to my spirit, and we commend shoulder to shoulder upon a common journey. And when we get to do things like this, we get to fellowship and we get to talk about the program and sharing the program with others and in service working one drunk with another, what happens is we get to experience something called the sunlight of the spirit. We enter the world of the spirit and we get to a place called bliss. And even that word falls short for it, because it's very simply experiencing the glory of God in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is the great news we should offer the newcomer. That is what I come here to offer you. My experiences with this power called God, and nothing less than that great fact. A loving God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988, and I will tell you I'm a recovered alcoholic, and anything less than that would be falsely humble. A loving God has brought me from a place of incomprehensible demoralization, driven by 100 forms of fear, driven by alcoholism and bondage of self, to a place called recovered. And not only recovered from the drink, the seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, but recovered from a lot of the isms that plagued me on the way into Alcoholics Anonymous and walked with me during my days in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I have found out the hard way, being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and being sober does not mean I'm recovered. There's some things I need to do, like the 12 proposals from the first portion of our big book, and wake up and then go work with others. And so today I stand here, tonight I stand here with a little bit of dignity, living in all three sides of the triangle, and seeing what I can do to continue to wake up and grow in understanding and effectiveness. And not so I can get to a podium and just share that and then my job is done. But have these experiences. Have these experiences where some books and some teachers take me to experience God and then give the whole truckload away to someone who cares to have what I got to offer. The whole thing in abundance I give away. And I shout. I shout from the rooftops like I will tonight, we ought to do this weekend, and we ought to do back at our home groups. Is shouting from the rooftops what God can do for us. That you never have to pick up a drink again, because God in His glory, what He will do for us is get us to be reborn and resurrects lives in Alcoholics Anonymous. It is so much more than just putting the plug in a jug or getting to a meeting or even a conference like this or even my big book or my home group. Because we're talking about in Alcoholics Anonymous the power of God and nothing less than that. Now, a lot of our contemporary AA meetings will hold back the solution called God and look for something else to show up. It's kind of like being wheeled into an emergency room at a hospital, right, bleeding to death, and the doctor comes in and says, hang in there for a little while. We'll get to you in 90 days. And we're screaming back to the doctor, I'm dying, fix me now. And yet in Alcoholics Anonymous, we have people walking in dying of alcoholism, whether they're coming right out of treatment, off the streets, or they've been in AA for 10 or 15 or 20 years, running around in here completely untreated. And our contemporary AA meetings will tell them, you just hang in there. Wait for the miracle to show up. The miracle I always challenge is that they're here. What am I going to do about that? Do I stand at the door ready to pass this message on? Am I armed with the facts? And shout to them, you never have to pick up a drink again, because God will do for us what we can never do for ourselves. That's the great news we ought to offer in Alcoholics Anonymous. All the fellowshipping we get to do, all the work we get to do in the 12 steps, all the service we get to do, one drunk work with another, all the wonderful things we get to do in Alcoholics Anonymous are simply, very simply, pointers to get to experience God, and nothing less than that. Because that's what my experience has proven to me. This whole deal, Alcoholics Anonymous, is about a lot of things, but it is always about God. And I will tell you, my book has taken me, the instructions in my big book have taken me to God. What they've really also done for me is taken me to another place. It's called silence. Because for me, God and silence have become synonymous. That's where my book has taken me to. Where my life is one of invitation. My life has become one. And I fought and clawed not to have this happen. And I greeted each day. My life is not only one of invitation, it is one of surrender. Surrendering to what is. And then taking action out of that. It relieves me each and every day of being attached to the external conditions, thinking that that's the remedy for an internal condition called alcoholism, which he wants me dead, will settle for me drunk. That she's going to get me well, the home group's going to get me well, the right job and money's going to get me well, all the external things, when they're all remedied, then I'll be a spiritual guru. And then remove one of those things from the equation. I'm down on my knees, looking for a sponsor, need to go through the work, I need to drink. My life has been made one of invitation and surrender. And that came out of a lot of things of self-will run riot and hitting a wall and surrendering once again to this power. And I'm so grateful for it. I'm so grateful for where I've been brought to. A loving God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988. And I was separated from alcohol in the back of a filthy hallway on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. The most sordid spot probably in Manhattan, certainly in my life in 1988. And a loving God didn't have to go to some fancy meeting in uptown Manhattan to get one of his children, or some fancy looking AA meeting or home group to get one of his children. But I made a sincere plea to this power called God, even though I wasn't too thrilled about him. But for the very first time in my life, June 23rd, 1988, I was as honest as I'll ever be, maybe in my entire life. And I pleaded, please take me from this. And my God showed up in one of the most sordid spots in my life. He didn't need a decorative palace to show up where everyone looks good. He went to the back of a filthy hallway and got one of his children because one of his children needed help. And I happened to be that person that day. I was brought to a place of having no reservations, no lurking notion, no more bargaining chips. I knew for the first time deep down in here that another drink was going to kill me. And I didn't want that for the first time in my life. And my Heavenly Father, I must be honest, shows up and says, enough. And I have other work for you to do. I didn't know it was going to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know I was going to get sponsors, and I didn't know I was going to go through the 12 steps and get to do things like this. I just, for the first time in my life, didn't want to die at the hands of booze. And God had much greater plans for me. And I will tell you, over the last 18 years or so that I've been kept separated from alcohol, there have been many times where I didn't know where I was going. That I was confused and angry and bewildered and suspicious and had some contempt as to where am I going on this journey. And God has always delivered, has always shown up, and brought me to where He needs to bring me. Because very often I would come at God and my journey with my thinking mind, which is so limited and so narrow-minded. I can be, you know, the most well-read man, the greatest speaker in Alcoholics Anonymous, gone to the best university. And when I come at God with my mind, it amounts to a grain of sand on a beach. When I come at what my life ought to be like, I'm limiting. And that's how I would come at God in my journey, with my thinking mind. And I would doubt and become uncomfortable. And God is infinite mercy and wisdom always guides me to where He needs me. I've learned, and come to experience the difference between my suffering and surrender. It happened to me in the back of a hallway, June 23rd, 1988. where I was brought from suffering to surrender. And the suffering was for years, blaming others for my journey, blaming others for my alcoholism, always trying to figure out another way to drink safely, another way not to get arrested, another way not to get into rehab, another way to get into another rehab. I mean, it was always figuring something, trying to control and manipulate my external world. June 23rd, 1988, that stopped. And so did the suffering, because I was brought from suffering to surrender. And the resistance in my mind was put aside for a moment. And that was the beginning of my journey. That was the beginning of freedom. Because I went from my thinking mind into here, somewhere deep down in here. Book says when we concede to our innermost self that we're alcoholic is the first step of recovery. That concession is a spiritual event when it happens. Doesn't mean we're going to get recovered off of that, but something has happened. I was truly in this most sordid moment in my life, present. I thought for years in Alcoholics Anonymous that my spiritual experience, my spiritual revolution began when I sat with the sponsor and went through the big book Alcoholics Anonymous. And for some of us that may be true, but for some of us it may not be true. And it wasn't for me. My spiritual experience began in the back of this hallway, where I completely surrendered and I was brought to that. And in that place, in that most sordid moment, circumstances made me willing to do anything. And I was willing to do anything that June 23rd, 1988. And I reflected upon that in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that really was the mustard seed that was going to move a mountain. It was the beginning of my spiritual journey. In the back of a horrible hallway is when my spiritual experience began. It started to manifest, and I came to wake up to it in Alcoholics Anonymous as a result of going through the 12 steps. And as a result of going through the 12 steps, I've been brought to a place called recovery. I couldn't get recovered on my best day. I couldn't been able to do some of the things I've done in Alcoholics Anonymous on my best day, or certainly work with another drunk. But it's simply the power of God. I am no longer powerless. Working with another drunk, my big book says, God will demonstrate through us what He can do. That's great power. God has given me and you great power. I am just not the power. But I get to work with other alcoholics. And if we think about it, when we lose, as a fellowship, if we lose one drunk working with another, we have no weekend like this. We have no conferences. We have no Alcoholics Anonymous, because that is the basic service we provide. One drunk working with another, and thus our fellowship grows. What a good deal. What a good deal to be a part of. How great is it to sit down with a sick and suffering drunk and tell them that you never have to pick up a drink again, ever? Your drinking's done if you subscribe to some of the prescription that's laid out in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Our contemporary meetings are constantly telling us, hang in there, Joe, a day at a time, call me when you want to pick up a drink. If I'm Joe, I call the sponsor after I get drunk. Because no human power is going to stop me prior to that. So I'm grateful, and I don't give the slip service, for the bottom that I hit in 1988, and all the bottoms prior to that, because they brought me to a place of willing to do anything, and I still suit up and show, willing to go to any lengths today, 18 years later, still seeking His power with the desperation of a drowning man. And no longer, because I got into this, worshiping the methodology in the big book. I was one of those guys, if you didn't dot every I and cross every T, I was more spiritual than you. God doesn't make too hot terms for those who earnestly seek. Move through the book. Let's share about our experiences to a new person. Let's share about our experiences with each other. Isn't that what this is about? Having an experience with a power called God, getting recovered, and go work with others. It wasn't like that for me for a long time. I was never one of those people who would talk openly and freely about this power of God. My journey began into Alcoholics Anonymous with my first drink. My journey into alcoholism began probably the day I was born. Because I remember prior to my first drink, I was one of those guys driven by 100 forms of fear. Simon talked about being restless, ill, and discontented. That sums up my childhood, driven by 100 forms of fear. Someone would ask me, as I was growing up, my name. And if I didn't know them, I would try to think of a name that would impress them so they would like me. I used to hear myself thinking. The sweat would come off my forehead when someone would sit down and talk to me. Going to school was a chore. It wasn't an opportunity. Being around people was incredibly difficult because I had a voice in my head that would scream at me all the time, "You don't belong, you're a loser." I show up to my first drink. I'm about 14 years old. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. If anyone's ever heard that, if you haven't, just watch The Sopranos on TV. That's Brooklyn, New York. Home groups back there look like Bill W. met Tony Soprano on the way to AA. That's our AA right there. But I was on the corner one night in Brooklyn, and my friends were drinking something called Colt 45 beer. And they were passing around the court, and they seemed to be joyous, happy, and free. And I wanted what they have to offer. And I remember being so reluctant to put my hand in there. My mind was just so attached to so many things. I had the judge screaming in my head. My mind was thinking, well, when that happens later on, I'll be okay. And if that didn't happen last week, I would have been okay. Always here, always there, never present. And it was not certainly no different this Saturday night. I wanted what my friends had to offer. I was driven by 100 forms of fear, including another fear, and he's called Dad, who's cunning, baffling, and powerful. My dad's a tough guy. And he would give me a lot of these stern warnings about not drinking on the corner with the guys. Never wanted me to catch me doing any of that stuff. I had lost my mom about 6 months prior to my first drunk. She would have been one of us. And she suffered that incomprehensible demoralization over and over and over. And she got to a place called the bitter end. And when taking a life looked like a way out, that's exactly what she did. And I will tell you, my design for living was taken right out of my laps. Right out of my lap. My legs were taken out from under me. I had no idea what to do. Certainly not how to operate around this guy called Dad. You know, in my mind's eye, I was like 6'12", cunning, baffling, and powerful. Let me get out of the room as soon as he walks in. And so I show up to the corner this one night, and they're drinking Colt 45 beer, and I don't want to drink, but a greater part of me wants to, because I want to capture what they got. And so I put my hand in there, and I threw a few pops down. It went down, and nothing happened. My dad didn't turn the corner. The cops didn't drive up. Everything was as it was. So I continued to drink, and I drank a little bit more, and I drank a little bit more, and something happened to me that was indescribably wonderful. I experienced for the first time in my life a sense of ease and comfort that came by taking a few pops off a quart of Colt 45 beer, something I never experienced before. And I continued to drink, and I got to feel even better about myself, better about my friends. I got taller, I got bigger, I found hair on my chest by the end of the night. All the girls on the corner wanted to talk to me because I was the guy to talk to. I was Dirty Harry and Beretta rolled into one, and I'll take more. What a good deal. I was present to the moment. It was truly a spiritual experience. I wasn't worried about what happened an hour ago, and I was not concerned about an hour from now. I just knew at that moment everything seemed to be okay, and I'll take more. I had no idea I stepped onto a road paved right to hell, and that's called alcoholism. I had the spiritual malady going, like many of us, before we pick up the first drink. But I also suffered from something called the mental obsession to alcohol. And my mind was always going to take me back to that which is killing me. And right now, currently being separated for as long as I am, it may not be booze up front. And for a lot of us, it may not be booze up front. But it'll be other things to get me back to a drink. Mind taking me back to that which is killing me, the mental obsession. And you know how we know when we're in that? We experience sprees in Alcoholics Anonymous and strange mental blank spots in Alcoholics Anonymous. They're called a sex spree, a food spree, a money spree, a fear spree, an anger spree, a spree. Where I am is way too painful. I need something. And we're off. And we emerge remorseful with the firm resolution, I'm never going there again. And God forbid any of my AA brothers and sisters saw me here. And then we're back in again. And we swear with the solemn oath, I'm not going to go back into that anger spree. I'm not going to visit that fear spree. I'm not going to go back into that sex spree or that food spree. And then we go back in because somewhere I have a mind of an alcoholic that convinces me to do something like that. and endorses that type of behavior, mental obsession. That's how I got the book to meet me each time going through it. I can talk to you now until tomorrow night about fear. It was crippling. And little by slowly, it dissolved and I got freer. My mind takes me back to a drink, and I pick up a drink, and we have this thing called a phenomenon called craving that our doctor's opinion talks about. I will tell you, when I drink alcohol, the craving's intensified, never satisfied. More was my drink, and here I am, spiritual malady, mental obsession, phenomenon called craving. And when my friends wrapped up that night, I was in like a panic. Well, wait a minute, I need to drink some more. Have no idea what just happened to me. I went home that night, got up the next morning, went down to the park to play ball with the older guys, and there was something different about my deportment on the way into the park. My shoulders were now this wide. I had given my passage into manhood the night before. When Bill says in his story, I had arrived, trust me, drinking cold 45 beer and getting fired up on a Saturday night, Pete Marinelli arrived. I arrived. I had a story. I could measure up to the older guys, and there was no doubt in me walking into the park with the older guys. I had something. I had something, and right from the get-go, it showed me how attached I was to my external world. This makes me feel good. And then when you remove it, there's nothing going on again. I drank on the weekends for a while, and then the weekend rolled into during the week. And I started to experience some consequences as a result of my drinking, and so did my family. By the time God separated me from alcohol in 1988, my family was suffering from full-blown alcoholism, and they're not alcoholic. Years of living with an alcoholic make any wife or child neurotic. The whole family is ill. And yet we'll get a lot of our AA meetings, we'll get a lot of people getting to a podium or sharing from the floor saying, all I have to do today is not drink and I'm a winner. And I will challenge that, because in the way I've been brought up in AA, that's arrogant and selfish. Because we're like tornadoes roaring through the lives of others. What do we leave? Damage and debris. And now that I get to the sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous, I expect that to be enough and they clean up the mess I've made. That's arrogant and selfish. That's not how God wants us to live. It's about getting this glorious gift and going back and repairing. Going back and being with other people. Going and working with other alcoholics. Give the whole thing away in abundance. So I will challenge that every time I hear that at a meeting, as we all ought to. My family was full-blown alcoholic, and they don't drink. And my family went from having somewhat of an okay life. I mean, it wasn't the most perfect life, but somewhat of an okay life, some order of a semblance, to experience frustration, terror, bewilderment, and despair by the time God separates me in 1988. And I start to drink. The progression of my illness, as Bill says, assume more serious proportions. And from stealing from my dad, I remember finding his checkbook one morning. And I said, what a great idea. I can forge his name and go cash the check and get some money and get fired up. And it happened. I did it. And so what a neat deal. I had my own ATM machine right in the living room. And I did that a few times. And then he got something back in the mail that I didn't know existed. They called checking statements. And he came looking for me. And he caught me over in Lower Manhattan. I was sitting in a car with this girl, a girlfriend at the time, and he drove up. And if you know my dad, his presence shows up about 20 minutes before he actually arrives. And he jumped out of the car, he screamed my name, and I was in serious trouble. And I told her, listen, you talk to him, I gotta go. I was a real man's man back in those days. And he caught me. And when I went off to my first treatment center. And it was the 28 days of treatment, and what I did was, I hadn't conceded to my innermost self. I went into my first few treatment centers because it got too hot. The heat was too hot, and I had to get off the streets for a while. And I went into treatment for 28 days. I ate great. I slept great. I talked about my dysfunctional family, my issues, my triggers, my enablers, all these things. And I hated my family more on the way out of treatment than on the way in. And they told me to go to AA meetings. And I remember being in Lower Manhattan inquiring about an AA meeting. When does this AA meeting start? In about an hour. Thanks. That justified me while I inquired and I can go drink. My mind wants to take me back to that, which is killing me, and I picked up a drink, and I was right back to the same vicious cycle. And I made my second and third and fourth treatment center. And I remember getting a job working for my dad. My dad was the shop steward. My dad was the boss of about maybe 500-600 men. They all knew him. He knew all of them. Had this impeccable reputation. And then he hired me. And I brought my illness into that place of employment. And I started to borrow money from people I shouldn't be in the same town with. I start to get paid on Wednesday morning and they'd have to look for me because I wouldn't come back until the money ran out. I wasn't showing up for work. I was doing a lot of things. I became a liar, cheat, and thief, and my dad got all of it. And from this man walking proud, he started to walk like he was ashamed and embarrassed about things that were going on, and he was, because it was me. What owned me was called alcoholism. What was owning him was called alcoholism. Oh, but we'll go to some of our middle of the road meetings and you'll get the speaker to say, all I have to do today is not drink and I'm a winner. Let's go ask the family members. Let's go ask the former employers. Let's go ask the spouses and the children if that's enough. Or is there more to be done? We forget we've tapped in this inner resource. It's called God, who will give us enough to go repair any damage, and make it right. But we put God in a box in Alcoholics Anonymous by saying the group is our God. That it's a weak program, which tells me it's no longer a spiritual program. We is a human power. What happens if the meeting's closed down? What if this place had a blackout? We couldn't have the meeting tonight. Does that mean we're going to get drunk because it's a weak program? Isn't God greater than that? My dad was experiencing my alcoholism, and I brought it down to the Brooklyn waterfront. Where it's a rough crowd. I work with a rough crowd. They weren't exactly spiritual gurus. I mean, I work with guys who were fed up with the day at sunrise, and there I was. You know. And I got fired from that job. They told me don't come back anymore for some of the behavior I was displaying. My dad would get knocks on his office door. You know what he did again? You know what he did this time? Where is he? And then my dad said, don't come back anymore. And I remember living with my dad and my kid brothers, who, when I was growing up, looked up to me. They were safe around me. I protected them. They were my younger brothers. And when I was in the grip of the grapes, they were no longer safe around me. They didn't want me around, nor did my dad. And I went to live with my grandparents, and they had to throw me out. And I would go from place to place to place, or from heart to heart to heart. And it wasn't too bad when you're getting drunk, right? Because she looks just like Bo Derek. And I would come to the next morning, she looked like Bo Diddley, and I wonder how I got to that channel. Identify with me? I remember going into my fifth treatment center. And I went into my fifth treatment center swearing off liquor forever. I remember looking at my eye, my dad dead in the eye, and said, Dad, I'm done. This is never going to happen again. Ever. I'm going to go into treatment and I'm going to put this all behind me. And I was 9 weeks. I was up in this treatment center for 9 weeks. Was physically separated from alcohol. I was out on a Saturday and I was drunk on a Monday again. And my family this time thought a lunacy commission should be appointed for me. What are we going to do with this guy? My dad, with all the love that he had to try to help me get sober, got me this little apartment. Tiny little place. Furnished it for me. Put money in my pocket. Bought me a television. Put the telephone in the wall, clothes to wear, all the things you would need to get going. And he left and I took the TV out on my shoulder and sold it. And I sold everything in the place until I got thrown out of this apartment. And before I got thrown out, I had like the Bowery living in this place. It was a pigsty. I was having these audio hallucinations. I was experiencing blackouts all the time. I wasn't making it to the bathroom at night. I was soiling my bed. I didn't care about it. I didn't sleep in a bed like I do now, next to someone I love, in a clean bed with clean sheets and pillowcases. I slept on a mattress that was soiled. I had garbage all over the floor, Mr. Boston Blackberry brandy bottles all over the place, and I didn't care, because the only thing that was on my mind, as long as I was awake, was getting money to the next drink or getting the next drink down me. And I was beaten to death by alcoholism. I will tell you, if I live to be 100, I'll never be as old as the day I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. But it wasn't done yet, nor was I. Because I got bounced out of this apartment and went to live on the streets and experience even further of that incomprehensible demoralization our book talks about. Because I had to go live in the back of hallways and do a lot of ugly things for the price of a drink. But I will tell you, you don't have to go to some of those extremes to have a seat here either. That was my journey. I had no idea when I was going to stop drinking. I had gone to a lot of meetings, and they would tell me, think the drink through, remember where you come from. And I would try to do that, and I would only get to, well, it wasn't that bad. That I had no input into that decision that was made for me by something called alcoholism. And when I got sober and recovered in here, I would challenge those same people with page 24 about trying to think the drink through. We tell newcomers in AA, remember where you come from, think the drink through. And my favorite is, bring the body and the mind will follow. Trust me, the last thing anybody wants is their mind showing up in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, let alone a newcomer. That's the thing that's killing them all the time. Yet these are the things, the pearls of wisdom, will kick out at some of our AA meetings. Rather than standing at the door when a drunk walks in, you're an alcoholic, yeah, you're willing to go anywhere else? Yeah, I can offer you a solution where you never have to pick up a drink again. Let's begin. But somehow 90 meetings in 90 days has replaced God. Don't drink and go to meetings has replaced God. Trust me, if I have the power to not drink and go to meeting, why would I come to a meeting and stay home and not drink the first time I got in trouble? With me? They call me controversial. Why are some of our members walking? We walk into AA meetings and share the experiences we had with our big book, our basic text as a fellowship, and we're called controversial. I'm a Catholic. It's like me walking into a church with a Bible and a priest saying, don't bring that thing in here. But here's what we need to be careful for. And I've seen this. This is my own experience. I come at you with experience tonight. Is that we have some of our big bookers working against our other big bookers. And Bill said, we'll destroy ourselves from within, not from without. We have these warring theologians in Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, you know what? I extended my third column and you didn't. And so on. I'm wired up tonight with this microphone. Now, back in Brooklyn, any guy who wears a wire doesn't go home at night. There's a change. Don't tell my dad I had a wire on, whatever you do. We have, in AA, these warring theologians. We have the big bookers against the non-big bookers. And then we have the big bookers, I've been seeing this the last couple of years, against the big bookers. I extended my third column. I answered more questions. I do the nightly review a little bit different. I'm more sober. That very statement is arrogant and you're sound asleep. My home group is called the Vision for You group, and we offer a solution now. We're in Union, New Jersey. And we have a lot of what we call people who are doing the contemporary thing show up at our meeting. And I will tell you, most of our members will still stand at the door and embrace them no matter what they're coming from, where they're coming from. We stand at the door ready. And let me never ever, I will challenge what you come at me with, but let me never ever character assassinate you as a person because I'm shutting down what has made me wake up, and that's God. Let me never character assassinate you or judge you as a person. Let me stand at the door. I will challenge you, but embrace you. Let the great reality deep without me recognize the great reality deep without you. And then maybe we can begin. Let me experience tolerance and patience when I work with a newcomer. That may take me to a place of compassion to understand what he or she is up against when we walk in here, because too many times we've forgotten. I've seen too much spiritual arrogance with those walking around with a big book. Because the guy or the woman keeps relapsing, they don't want it. No, they're the real alcoholic. That's why they're relapsing. What are you doing to offer a solution? Those are the ones we ought to be paying attention to, because those are the ones who are dying. Simon talked about getting 5 one-year coins. That's the real deal. That's the guy who wants this. Now, he don't want it. Do I stand ready? That's what we ought to be about in Alcoholics Anonymous. Never, ever, I hope to ever judge someone by character. Let me not judge my brother and sister in AA because they don't talk from the big book. Let me challenge it. Let me challenge it. I hope to never judge them. They only know what they know. And we get taught. You can only be brought to truth as long as you're ready to receive it. Only can learn what you're open to being taught. But sometimes we lock and load on the non-big bookers. And when they fall short, it's a great quote I've held on to. My sponsor passes on to me what the carpenter said. Before I take the speck out of your eye, let me take the plank out of mine. If I'm truly awake, claim to be awake in Alcoholics Anonymous, I claim it with my lips, then how can I judge you? Maybe I'm not so awake. Maybe I'm sound asleep, completely untreated, but my ego won't allow me to see that. I get out of my fifth treatment center and my family's suffering from untreated alcoholism, right? I'm full-blown alcoholic. I'm getting addicted to anything with a name. And I wound up in my sixth treatment center. And I spent a day and a half in my sixth treatment center. And I had to sign myself out because the obsession to drink alcohol was that powerful. I had counselors plead with me, Peter, don't leave, you're going to die. But my thinking mind says, I have to get out of here. We need to leave. We need to get another drink in us. And if there was a crack in the wall I was going through, and that's what I did. I signed myself out, and out the door I went. And I hit another bottom. My times out on the street were getting closer and closer together. I wasn't lasting long on the street. The progression of my illness was full-blown. I was suffering from serious alcoholism. I was dying of alcoholism. And my times on the street just weren't making it. No. 6, 8 weeks, 3 months, back in another treatment center. I wound up outside the Port Authority one day. And I don't know till this moment. I've shared this story a million times. I don't know what happened to me before, and I don't recall what happened to me afterwards, but I was very much aware of this event and another event that followed. I had this moment of clarity, that flimsy greed that proves to be the loving and powerful hand of God, where we're struck sober for a moment, where everything stops, and we know deep down in here, beyond what we can comprehend, that I am alcoholic and I'm going to die. And that happened to me, Midtown Manhattan. I'm right by this bus terminal. And I look up to the overpass, and I start to curse God. I had remembered my mom and my dad and my kid brothers and my entire family, and I knew what I had turned into and that I was going to die a death like this. And what I did was I blamed God. I was a God fighter for a long time. I would more than bristle with antagonism if you mentioned God. And I let God have it. Because you did this to me. You turned me into this and you took my family, and I want no part of you. When every four-letter word I can come up with, God got it all. And I don't know what happened to me afterwards, but I do remember this. I was in the back of a hallway, the hallway I opened up this story with. And the courage to do battle, as Bill says, was not there. I knew deep down inside another drink was going to kill me. I had God serve me truth again. See, he wasn't a human power that would say, you know what, Peter, I put you in 6 treatment centers. You've cursed me and your family. I'm done with you. Because in the back of this hallway, I made a plea. If you're out there, please take me from this. I can't do it anymore. I was done. That came from a place way beyond my mind, way beyond thought. It came from here, this power called God, the great reality deep down in, where everything was completely removed for a moment, which is what our work does. It removes all the calamity, all the pomp, all the worship of other things, all the fears, all the resentments. It removes the wedge between us and God. It's removed through this work, the subtraction, rather than addition, to wake up. This illness brought me to that place. There was nothing, if you will, between me and this power. And I said, please take me from this. And my Heavenly Father shows up in the back of a filthy hallway and takes one of his children and places me in my 7th and God willing last treatment center. I remember walking through the streets having these crying jags, trying to call my dad. The only guy on this entire planet who was going to come get me now was my dad. Now, I've heard in AA for years how God works through people, but it is only us, His people. I remember going to the phone to call my dad, and I'm trying to call him, having these crying jacks, and I just couldn't do it. I kept thinking if he saw me in this filthy condition, dying like I was, it would surely break his heart. And my dad had a feeling that I was in trouble and drove about 2 hours to come look for me, and he found me, and when he got out of the car, he wasn't screaming my name. God gave him a spirit to touch mine, an approach to touch me. If he would have come at me hollering, if he would have come at me in an aggressive way, you may have had a different speaker here this weekend. But God allowed him to approach me the way I needed to be approached, with love and compassion. Let me take that. Let me be awake to God. Allow God to move me when I work with another alcoholic. Not to stand in judgment because he or she is relapsing, but to understand, as our book says, they're very ill. How would I want to be approached? How do I work with another drunk? And my dad walked across the street, did no hollering, just called my name. And I said, "Dad, I'm okay." And then I collapsed into his arms. And I remember him holding on to me, and I was very much aware of that because that's not the type of person he was. He is now, wasn't then. And I was off to my seventh and God willing last treatment center, and I was in this place about 10 days, and the insidious insanity of the first drink was galloping back. My illness don't care what kind of concession I've made. My illness don't care I'm speaking this weekend. My illness don't care I'm sober 18 years or how many people I sponsor. It's cunning, baffling, and powerful, and very patient. It'll lay around and wait. And I was in this treatment center swearing off liquor forever. About 10 days went by, and suddenly it was starting to show up that if I can get out of treatment and get a Jack Daniels in me, I can go back to group and talk about my enablers, my dysfunctional family, my triggers, and my issues, right? But they sent me off to Minnesota. And some really neat people out there disturbed me regularly on the question of alcohol. And they said, "Pete, you've tried everything. You've tried girl, no girl, job, no job, money, no money. You're suffering from an illness which only your spiritual experience will conquer, and we'll show you how to do it. It's called the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous." And I wanted what they had to offer. I would go walk into this one meeting on a Friday night, and people were dressed. They stood at the door dressed, like recovered members of Alcoholics Anonymous, not like they were getting dressed to go commit a felony. They looked like recovered people. And then they would invite me into their homes. They would take me out to the restaurants because I had no money. And I would see how they would get through their challenges with family and jobs and their home group with dignity as recovered members. And they talked about their book. They talked about their God. They talked about making amends and all the things they would do. And God put me with a wonderful group of people. And I was open to be there to hear it. And then I was brought home. And I was brought to my first home group, the Free Spirit Group. And my first appointed teacher showed up. And if you're having trouble with getting a sponsor, ask your Heavenly Father. Why would He deny you a teacher to take you to Him? And this first man showed up, and we walked through the book. And he taught me great lessons. And then I found out if the sponsor is not growing and understanding and effectiveness, and the student then becomes the teacher. And now instead of commencing shoulder to shoulder, we were going in different directions. And I was starting to take on some of the sponsor's personality. A book says we can't transmit something we haven't got. And we will what we do, and that's called untreated alcoholism if we have it, to the prospects. And I start to hit a wall. I couldn't get past fear anymore. And then I heard a gentleman who you're going to hear tomorrow, Mark. And he scared the heck out of me the first time I heard him. But God, I was praying, "Father, please, I need a teacher. I don't want to be mean to my old sponsor. I don't want to be disloyal to my old sponsor, but I'm dying again. Please help me. What do? I need a teacher." And my current sponsor happens to be in town for a workshop. And I approached him. and he agreed to work with me. And my life has been indeed miraculous. I was one of those people who would sit in the back of a room and have contempt upon investigation on just about everything, especially those who were reworking the steps and seeking new experiences and growing in understanding and effectiveness. And I'm one of the people now who continually go through the work. To experience more of the death of self, before the physical death, to experience the death of self, in order to wake up. Successful living is daily dying. And every time I get to go through the work, I experience some more discomfort, because I get to look at me again. All the manifestations of self, little by little, they start to dissolve. I remember I was in found myself going through a divorce, got laid off from work, went to my bank, and most of my money was missing. And I was fearful of losing my home. This happened in about 15 minutes. I remember being in a parking lot outside of some restaurant in New Jersey. I had bargained with God prior to this, argued with God, tried to manipulate God, tried to get around God, tried to sneak something through the archway past God. And I hit the bitter end. And I looked up to the heavens and I says, I'm done. Father, please move me past this. I will do anything. I don't want to run the show anymore. The next morning I called up Mark and we began going to the work again. And I got to identify where fear was coming from. My thinking mind. Always back to my thinking mind. Always back to my thinking mind. For me, the main problem center is in the mind, not the body. Not only with the drink, but every other area of my life. And it'll feel real when it isn't. Over the last 18 years, I will tell you, my family has been reassembled. We have our challenges, but we walked shoulder to shoulder. I have been given a new life today. And I stand here tonight with a little bit of dignity. For years, I used to think I would pray to this power, believe in this power, seek this power. Now I'm just a seeker of experience, not belief and faith. But I would always wonder, does my God know me, Peter Marinelli? I've had experiences with him. I can talk about it from a place of experience. But does my God truly know me, Peter Marinelli? Does he hear my heart when it weeps? Does he hear my heart when it's full of joy? And then I had an experience because of what we get to do in AA called prayer and meditation. Talk about entering the world of the spirit in an AA meeting. Talk about some of your experience with meditation at an AA meeting. You'll hear silence and I tell you, don't come back here anymore. Right. You know why? Because very few people are doing it. In some groups, no one's doing it. How do I get to experience this presence in all that I do? The silence I've been brought to because of this work, I get to experience regardless of the external noise out there, regardless of the noise in here, regardless of the noise of my voice interrupting the silence, it's there, it's always present, it underlies all. And I get to go there. Here. But I'll just close with this. What happened out of a meditation? When I was in the grip of the grapes, I used to wonder where my mom moved to. Where is she? And I used to plead, in these drunken stupors, I used to plead to this God, if you're out there, you so-and-so, make this woman come down from wherever she is, and I used to beg God to let her hold me. My mom passed away, she took her life, and I never got to say goodbye, I never got to hold on to her. And so I used to, in these drunken stupors, say, let her show up just one time. It never happened. But it really did. Because I get sober, 1988, and right from the get-go, I start visiting my house of worship and lighting two candles, one for the sick and suffering in and out of the rooms, and one for my mom. For the sick and suffering in and out of the rooms, a selfish, self-centered alcoholic on my best day when it came up, I'd come up with that, but God gave me that, and one for my mom. And I started to do this, no expectations, from moment to moment, no questioning, just going into my house of worship, lighting a couple of candles, making prayer, getting still, and going. And I started doing this from the get-go. Well, I'm working working with my sponsor, and I'm sober now 8 or 9 years, and I'm still going to my religious place and lighting these candles, and I get this meditation experience that completely revolutionized my life about this power called God. And I can talk to you from a place of experience. Because I go into this meditation, and in this meditation, this is what takes place. I find myself sitting on this beach early in the morning, and where the water meets the sky, out on the horizon, in this meditation, what comes out is a figure of my higher power, and he's walking towards me. And as he starts to get closer to me, what appears out of his chest is my mom, and she's standing next to me. And from an adult, I become this little 8-year-old kid, and she kneels down and she gives me this big hug. And she had tears rolling down her eyes. She was weeping, but they were tears of joy, and I knew that. And there were no words spoken to this whole experience. And I stood up and I was an adult again, and she held on to me once more. And I remember this. My conception of God, my higher power, was standing to my left. He put his arm around me, and I remember looking into his eyes and feeling an incredible amount of peace and love, overwhelmed by it. And he told me without saying anything that she's with me and she's going to be okay. And then I remember my mom pointing off to the horizon on both sides of her, and there were all these flickering lights. She pointed off to the left, pointed off to the right, all these flickering lights. And I remember her holding on to me again in this meditation, her walking away from higher power, becoming one. And I came out of meditation, and I will tell you, I don't know if I was in meditation for 5 minutes or an hour. But I got to a place that was untouched, deep down within. We can get that in meditation. I've heard it called pure consciousness. No thinking minds involved. I'm not present. But presence is. And I called up my sponsor immediately, and I says, what is this? I was weeping. I was confused. It was very emotional. And he said to me, because at the time my first sponsor was awake, he says, Peter, haven't you been lighting candles for your mom for about 8 or 9 years now? And I says, yes, I have. And he says, she let you know she got them. And it was delivered. My higher power knew me, Peter Marinelli. That is the great thing we can get in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's beyond just getting here to a meeting. Because it is truly about experiencing God and nothing less than that. I thank you for your time. I thank you for this invitation. God bless you.